Hi, welcome to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan. This is the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. We've talked a lot about education and art on this show, and today we're bringing those two things together. My guest tonight is Kenneth Feinstein. He's an associate professor at the Department of Communication Studies. He's the interim head. He's also with the Center for Research Creation in Digital Media, all at the School of the Arts, Sunway University. Thank you so much, Ken, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Recently curated a show at Whaling Gallery entitled Paralogical Machines, What Images Meet Us in Space and Time. So, and I know because I've visited the show that you also are an artist. I mean, you contributed a piece in that show that you curated. Now, for many of us don't understand, I mean, how somebody who's an academic and teaching and especially theory can also be a practitioner. Tell us a little bit about your journey, your own intellectual development.
Okay. What's kind of amazing is, not too long ago, I kind of realized when I was in high school, I wanted to study philosophy and I wanted to be a video artist. And now here I am many decades later and I've actually done that. And somehow or other, without my, you know, feeling like I went here and I went there, somehow there I came back to where I always wanted to be, which is kind of interesting. I kind of feel that as a contemporary artist, you have to be deeply engaged with theory and asking questions of how and why. Why do we do what we do? How do we do it? What's the reasons behind things? I think that the role of the artist is to ask these questions. So I think the two things are very sort of deeply tied together, and they should be deeply tied together.
Who are your role models? I mean, you're in high school thinking you want to be a philosopher and a video artist. I mean, were your role models from popular culture? Were they from your immediate surroundings, your high school?
You know, I think one of the things that really inspired me was discovering Nam June Paik and discovering the work of Nam June Paik. And
she's an American.
He's a Korean.
Oh,
he's a Korean. He's one of the father of video art. He was a Korean artist who lived in Germany and lived in the United States. He was did a lot of work with John Cage. He really kind of invented a whole new genre, a whole new way of looking at things, which was how to use video, how to make things feel very contemporary and very of the moment. And I ran into some of his work and when I was a kid, and it just kind of inspired me, and I said, this is what I want to do. And I became very interested in playing around with what video is.
Okay, so the idea of seeing things differently might seem counterintuitive for many of us, because we imagine that the world is just there, and when we open our eyes, we see the world.
Yeah.
So how is it that we could see it differently, and how can an artist or somebody in, you know, using a new medium like video back then, teach us to think differently about the world?
Well, hopefully, you know, you train as part of training as an artist and learning about composition and technology and so on, you start to understand how you put images together and the fact that all images are very different than any image that we see is very different than actually how we see the world. I mean, we think about movies and we think about photography as a natural way of seeing things, but it's all based on the idea of a one-point perspective. It's actually built as if we only had one eye, and we have two eyes, and we don't really see things in terms of one-point perspective, but it imitates what we see enough, so it feels natural, but then that also gives us room that if you just shift something a slight bit, a couple of degrees off, suddenly it looks very odd, it looks very off. And when you start to really think about how images get put together, you start to think about how you compose things, and then you start making images that have different kinds of ways of seeing things. Another great influence on me was the Russian photographer Alexander Roshenko, who helped invent constructivism and constructivist photography. And that was very much about finding the odd angles and finding the ways of looking at the world that you don't normally think of. I mean, normally we think about, well, we look like this, but think about how many times you look down, you look out a window and you look down at a building and the angle is like this and the world sort of comes down like that. Well, when you start photographing that and you start looking at what it is, then we start to think about how we see the world differently.
Right, and Okay, so I get the video art thing. It's intriguing. A medium that kind of what's in the 70s, is it?
Would it it's kind of really started in the 70s and into the 80s.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but philosophy, because it's an ancient endeavor for human beings. I mean, going back to the Greeks, to the Chinese, the Indians, wherever it is, you know, philosophy comes from. Why philosophy and video art?
Well, I guess I'd say at a certain point, especially, again, if you want to talk in the 70s and 80s and as conceptualism happened, we really started to, art took on the function of being more metaphysical as the rest of the world didn't know what to do with it. And philosophy even didn't know what to do with being metaphysical. And it started to ask questions of like, as we look at the world, how do we understand what we're seeing and why are we seeing it? And there are a lot of fundamental questions that happen if you start to look at the world in what we call phenomenological ways, like what are the phenomena in the world and how do we understand from there what is the meaning behind it? That's exactly what art does, right? We make an image and then we're saying in this image, how do we talk about whatever's behind it? So it's a very similar process in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but a lot of more pedestrian views of art is art is about capturing beauty in the world and representing that either in canvas or in shapes and forms, whatever it is, in pottery. And it's that, you know, it is or isn't, and of course your the show Paralogical Machines is deeply conceptual, and I think might shock people who might not actually understand it as art. I mean, and I imagine you'll get that question over and over again. How is this art?
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, I can say that when you say that art is about beauty, that itself is a deeply philosophical question. Why is something beautiful? And what is it that makes us consider something beautiful? And what do we accept? And one of the things we know from the history of art, things that we consider deeply beautiful now and accept as deeply beautiful, at one point were shockingly ugly. So those things are always shifting, and asking those questions is also asking the questions of how do we see the world and how do we understand the world and what is the world that we live in? The world we live in now is vastly different, let's say, than it was 100 years ago. It's a, you know, and as a different world, we understand things in a different way. In relation to the show itself, what we were looking to do was we were looking to say, how do, again, this idea of how do things move, how do things shift, how do we understand our relationship to media? We, you know, again, if we were to say 100, 150 years ago, we had paintings on walls. And we looked at paintings, and we kind of, in, at least in the Western tradition, also in the Chinese tradition, we kind of looked at them almost like windows. They sent us out to a world that we saw beyond that. It was as if we're seeing an imaginary or a real world on the other side of whatever that frame is. And now, with media, we are living in a space where it's around us, and we're living in relation to it. And the questions of being, of what does it mean to live in relation to things? Why, how is media becoming, I talk to you, I interact with media, I kind of do it in the same way. How does media now become part of our life and not just a thing up on the wall, not just a thing we look at a distance and say, oh, that's nice, now let's move on, but actually engages us. And how it creates the dialogues that we normally have.
Right, okay. And this is a perfect segue for return to the center at which you are a researcher, Center for Research Creation in Digital Media. Yeah. We're going to be looking at that shortly. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm with Kenneth Feinstein. He's an associate professor at the Department of Communication Studies and also research at the Center for Research Creation in Digital Media, the School of Arts at Sunway University. Interesting title for a center for Research Creation, hyphenated, Okay, explain, why research creation?
Well, when we talk about art and research and so on, there are a lot of different ways of describing it. And there's been research as practice and art, you know, research-based artwork, and they all tend to push us in one direction or another. The phrase research creation actually comes from the Research Council of Canada. And it's the sort of the broadest definition that we found, that the my boss, Harold Thwaites, who started the research center, he found this to be the most broad one, and it allows for people to, for a variety of things to be included within what is considered research creation. So research creation is about researching creative work. It's about the process of research being a creative act. It's about taking research and creating works. It can be, or even just data visualization. How do you creatively make data visualization in a way that adds a degree of information to a public? All of these things can be considered research creation, where if you use these other phrases, they tend to be, oh, it should be this or it should be that. And in the research center, we're trying to promote this across the university, across the society. We are working internationally with other organizations.
The center sits as part of the university,
yes.
If somebody like you on the faculty are from a department, but then you have an association with
right.
the center.
So the research center, so the center itself, we do our own research projects. We've done a lot of work actually with Malaysian heritage and finding new ways to preserve and present Malaysian heritage. And I've given you a couple of books to show you examples of that.
Right, so this would be
folklores,
the Hainan boat builders of Pangko Island would be another example?
Yes.
Right, okay.
So we went there, we interviewed the people there, we found a boat builder,
in this instance, it looks like
Mr.
a brochure.
Go. Right, and so in this case, for example, we found a boat builder, Mr. Go, who's about, I think at this point he's 70 years old. And he's one of the master boat builders. And they build these large boats that are used in the very important in the fishing trade here in Malaysia. And he's one of the last boat builders. And one of the things that's interesting about these guys is they don't build with plans. It's all here. They just say, let's do this. We went in with 360 cameras, with drones. We made 3D models and so on. And we accumulated all this information, and we made an exhibition. But also with this book itself, it also has augmented reality built into it. So you can, for example, if you have a copy of this book, there's a QR code. You download the app. If I put my camera over this, my phone over this, a video will play, and it introduces Mr. Go, and we get to see what he's doing. In some other pages, we have photo slideshows. We have a 3D model. We even on the back have access to, on YouTube, a 360 VR video. So you can look around. Virtual reality in 360. So you can look around. You can see what it's like to be on the boat in the middle of it being built.
Wow. That's
so we've put all of that through here. So on the one hand, you just have the brochure. On the other hand, you have all this other material, which adds so much to it. And we've exhibited it. Some of these things as video projections in galleries and things like that. We've used 3D printers to print models of it, but we also have something like this that you can have, which gives you all this extra information, which allows you to experience what this is in a different way. And that's what research creation
does. Okay, good that you mentioned the word experience, because it does seem that what much of this endeavor is about re-experiencing the world. I mean,
exactly.
We obviously are living in a three-dimensional, maybe four-dimensional world.
Four-dimensional world because of time,
right?
Of course.
So we live in a four-dimensional world. We don't have to recreate it, but we don't appreciate it as much unless, in this case, we're taken out of it and then through what seems like a two-dimensional thing, a brochure, we suddenly are plunged back into a world with a certain experience. So I think it's fascinating. Now, this center attracts, faculty like yourself. It also
but we also have the masters. We also have a master's program.
Students.
Right. So
and
we have a master's.
Where are they coming from?
That's really interesting. We have a master's program. It's called Visual Communication and Media Studies. And we're teaching them some of this. The core of what we're trying to teach them is the idea that the future of communications, storytelling. Right, it's basically storytelling and understanding how do we tell stories across different forms of media. Because this is on the one hand, this is a brochure. On the other hand, this has all this media information, but it all works around telling a story. And the story that we decided was the story of Mr. Go. So we built him and we built everything around a story, an idea of telling a story. And this is what we're doing in the master's program. We're trying to say, how do we tell stories across multiple media? How do you use that? How do you use research? How do you put all these things together to communicate something through a concept of narrative?
You know, I wonder if your students come thinking they're going to be taught the skills, the hardware, the cameras, and how to make these things rather than the storytelling, the creating of...
We've been emphasizing the idea of the storytelling, and the students that we've had a really interesting group. You asked me where my students are. I have an interesting group. Right now we start off with four students in our first intake. One was from Bangladesh, and she was one of our undergraduates. One came in from marketing. One owns her own fashion line and does all her own marketing and so on. She's a local fashion designer, and one's an animator. And so we have a variety of people coming in from a variety of places, and they understand that the storytelling and the theory is very important and is at the core of things. We do teach them technology, but we haven't made, and we do teach them technology, the technology is important, but we haven't made it that's a technology program, it's a conceptual program. The technology is a means to an end. And we always understand, and they
so
always
not
understand.
Technicians.
They're not technicians. No, that's not what a graduate program should be. They're not technicians. They're learning to be storytellers. And they're learning how to use different media and understand different media to tell these stories. Now, within that, of course, we have taught them how to do augmented reality. We have taught them a bit about 360 video. In the coming semester, we're going to be teaching them a little bit about physical computing and a little bit about video. And some of them know a bit to coming in. You know, like I said, one person studied character animation before. So some they can always help each other with information and knowledge and skill. But they know that those are a means to an end. And what's more important is the idea of how do you research things, again, this idea of research creation. How do you take information, bring it together, and present it to a public in a way that's meaningful?
Okay, we'll take a short break,
sure.
And we'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Kenneth Feinstein, Associate Professor of the Department of Communication Studies, also with the Center for Research Creation in Digital Media. What we're talking about earlier was the question of storytelling that's come up.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to people in theater. I've talked to people in branding and advertising.
Mm-hmm.
They all now want to be storytellers, interestingly enough. And it's so much part of the buzz around the creative industries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question, Ken, for you is, how do you teach creativity? After all your decades of teaching, do you think that there are just some people who have something innate to them? Or is it really a function of their training, that these creative individuals?
Well, I mean, you can always say that some people are more creative than others and some have more skill. I mean, you know, Picasso obviously has more skill at painting than I would ever have in my life, on the one hand. On the other hand, everyone is creative to a certain extent, in that creativity is about finding ways of looking at things from different angles and then somehow or other putting that into a form that can communicate to others. And so that's what we need to teach people. And part of that is maybe a little bit more unteaching some of what they've learned before. You know, people have tend to learn that you do things this way. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to say, if you understand this from here and that from there, and you put it together, suddenly you get a whole new perspective on things.
Okay, so the unlearning, very interesting to me, because in the new Malaysia, there's a lot of talk about education reform. Mm-hmm. We now have an initiative by the Minister of Education saying kids are not going to have exams for the first 3 years of their lives in school. Now, I think, and he's emphasized the idea of play.
Mm-hmm.
Should we get it right? You're getting kids after many years doing their foundation, I mean, after 10 years or 12 years of study already, if you spend all your time kind of undoing the past, you might be less productive. What could we do at the school level so that people like yourselves don't have to undo and make kids unlearn?
Well, it's more, and maybe unlearning is kind of it's a very provocative way of saying it. But part of what we're really doing is we're trying to get them to understand that what you learned in math and what you learned in history actually are tied together, and that there are ways of understanding that if you can understand how these things work together, then you can start to see things in a different way. So when I say we need to unlearn things, it's what we need to unlearn is the silos, is that I learned this in this subject and therefore it never applies to that subject. So it's the idea of understanding how things cross together and how things become interdisciplinary and how one thing influences another thing. That if I want to understand how a movie works and I want to understand something about time, it means that maybe I need to read a book on physics and maybe I need to understand something about that because it might influence the way that I make a film. And so what we're trying to do, and especially in a master's program, what we're trying to do is we're trying to get them to see, to look at things in a different way. To look at, sometimes we ask them to do things backwards. Tell me about the things that you don't like instead of the things that you do like, or whatever. To start to see where the connections come together. Because that's, in some ways, when we like to talk about creativity, especially, let's say, you know, like Archimedes or someone like that, it's that point of where things come together. When we suddenly understand how things that seem disparate fold into each other, that we suddenly have these great eureka moments, as we say, that we like to think of as creativity.
Okay, I want to ask you this question, and sure. It's a larger political question. Mm-hmm. You've taught in Singapore for a mm-hmm. long time. Now you're here in Malaysia, mm-hmm. both reasonably authoritarian mm-hmm. Countries mm-hmm. and also societies that maybe value conformity over the, you know, the wild individual right. who breaks free from the mm-hmm. herd, as it were. Do you think that holds us back as societies, that this culture of conformity, if that's the, mm-hmm. the correct characterization, mm-hmm. Mitigates against us really, you know, doing well in terms of the creative industries? Singapore's had a hard time producing right. great films, for instance, so on and so yeah. forth.
Although, I mean, I have a few friends who I think have made some very good films out of Singapore.
True, I've seen some really great Singaporean films yeah. too, but...
No, I understand what you're saying. You know, the thing is, what's interesting is the things that you can talk about in terms of conformity, and this idea of saying of thinking about things in very sort of in boxes, has been very good to sort of industrialize to a point, to get everyone to a certain place, to make the factories work, to train people to be engineers and things like this, to get to a certain point. But then at a certain point, to be leaders in industry, to become places where new things are developed and so on, that's where we have to sort of move beyond, and that's where we have to break down those barriers. So it may have been in a place like Singapore, in a place like here, it may have been very good to get us to where we are, but now we're at a point where we have to go beyond that. And you see that in, this is going to be an issue very soon in China. You see this is part of what I think helped create the economic crisis and sort of the stagnation in Japan too, is things were defined in a certain way, things were so hierarchical that they allowed to grow to a certain point, but then they stopped growing. And things can only start growing when you start getting, when you cross-pollinate. And so I think that we're at a point now where if you want, not just in creative industries, but just in any industry, if we want to start to move forward, we need to start to think about how these things can cross-pollinate, how we can understand things from one place and see them in another.
In your experience, when you look out in mm-hmm. the world, where are the exciting things happening? I mean, I know this is a very broad question, but mm-hmm. just within your field, where is it happening? Why do you think it's happening there?
I mean, in terms of the arts, where
in terms of the arts and creative industries, you know, where mm-hmm. new things are happening. Maybe it isn't just centered one place, but
that's one of the things that's interesting is that it isn't centered in one place anymore, and that you can find some really fascinating, some really happening stuff. Let's say in Indonesia, where there's some interesting film happening. There's some really Yogyakarta's become a really, really interesting center for creative arts, and especially arts and science working together. And you can also find some interesting things still happening, you know, at places like ZKM and in Germany. Different countries are doing different things, and I think that it's what's changed is that there isn't a center anymore. There isn't one place where everything has to be, and the world is focused there. It used to be New York, it used to be Paris, it used to be London, it used to be wherever. And that's completely broken down. And that gives, to a certain extent, it gives people from anywhere room to be able to do whatever they want, but it doesn't also guarantee, it doesn't mean that, let's say, KL is going to become the new center of the art world, or Singapore is whatever. It's that we all become equal players, and it's that idea that now we live in a world where we move from one place to another, that it shouldn't be an odd thing for example, in the exhibition, Erica Tan. Erica's from Singapore, she teaches at Central St. Martin's in London. That's a normal thing, that I came from New York, I came to Singapore, and now I'm here. That this is a normal part of the world, that we should all be sort of shifting and moving and being able to collaborate and being able to work, and that I can work with people like Tintin from Indonesia, who's now doing a postdoc in Sweden, actually, and working across four different universities. That this is what's happening now, and that
across four different universities.
Four different universities have a research center in Uppsala, and she's part of that.
Right. Fascinating. We're going to have to bring you back to tell us more about what's happening at the center and also what's happening around the world. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Ken, for being with us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a great time.
Okay. I've been speaking to Kenneth Feinstein, Associate Professor of the Department of Communication Studies, and also with the Center for Research Creation in Digital Media at the School of the Arts, Sunway University. We've been talking about arts and education and creativity. This is Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin, only on Astro Wani.